Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on July 15th, 2020, and it's a pleasure to have you here today. I appreciate it. I hope everybody's being safe, what with the pandemic and all out there. And, you know, just stay safe and enjoy the summer. What can I say? People are talking about how schools are going to go back next year, and we keep an eye on that. We'll keep you posted as we learn more and more about it here on Education Talk Radio today. A little change of pace for us because everybody's so concerned about schools going back and the equity questions and access questions and all that. But I've got one of my favorite guests here. I'm going to call him Doctor. He's a PhD student, but he's going to get that doctorate. Anand, okay, who's a graduate, just got his master's from in TESOL, teaching of English to students of other languages, ESL teacher. He just got that from the Minnesota State, Mankato. Now he's down at the University of Georgia, all right, getting his doctorate, and one of his favorite things, and he's let me know this over the course of time, is using narrow reading technique for supporting literacy development K-12, and that's especially good for ESL kids. There's some research on that. So I invited Saurabh back to talk about this, give us a little idea of what's the best way to approach literacy and reading and all that sort of stuff these days. And I also want to ask him, I'll give him a little hint, okay, how that's going to work and if it will work during the pandemic when a lot of places are going to be forced to be teaching online. Okay, and I have a feeling it might work very, very well. So stay tuned, and we'll get to Saurabh in just a second. Okay, we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org, tweet it out at EduTalkRadio. Please go over, join our consortium, our American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org. When you do that, you get a free subscription to our online journal, which is also right on site over there, called AC&E, Equity and Access. And that's really what we're all about, is equity and access, pre-K-12. So please go over there at ace-ed.org and join with us. We would appreciate that, and you'll be joining a whole group of industry leaders and educators in the fight for equity and access for everybody. We want your voice heard. Okay, without further ado, let me bring on my friend Saurabh. Hi, Saurabh. Larry's here.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for inviting me again. It's a pleasure.
It's my pleasure to have you here, my friend. What do you hear? I know you're from India. What are you hearing from the folks at home about the pandemic and everything?
Well, India has become the third most affected country in the world because of the coronavirus. So I'm certainly my parents and my family's in general's well-being. However,
good,
they are taking precautions, so I am a little relieved on that part, but you know, living away from your family always puts you in a vulnerable position, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really scary out there, and I don't have a chance that often to talk from people, you know, from other countries, etc. Of course, you're in Georgia right now. Are you feeling safe down there?
Well, it is relatively safe, but I am mostly not going out. I'm just going out when I really, really have to go. And it's incredible to see how many people are out already. But the other day I was at some restaurant to pick my food up, and the restaurant was completely packed. So instead of having food, full of anxiety that how many people are there outside and having food, like as if pandemic hasn't happened yet or hasn't happening.
If some people have their head in the sand, I'm afraid, and I hope all those people stay safe, okay, and they don't overdo it, because I just say this before we get into this, everybody seems to be getting a little bit complacent. And I'll say that even me at times. I just sometimes forget to put on the mask or whatever. I usually, when I go out to a public place, I wear a mask, but I found myself forgetting to do it the other day. It's just easy to get complacent because we're getting used to the situation. Okay, this is not an excuse, by the way. And it's summertime, a complacent time of year. Okay, but please, everybody, do that. We'll keep you posted on what's going on with school. You're going to University of Georgia. What are they saying about school this coming fall, Dr. Anand?
So the University of Georgia is going to offer hybrid classes for now, and that has brought a lot of relief because of the recent ICE's decision of sending international students back. So I'm so relieved that yesterday the decision came in the favor of international student communities.
I was thinking about you this week when all that was going down, and I'm so glad that ruling from the administration was overruled and they retreated on that one and went back, okay, because I'm glad you're staying here, and I'm glad we have our international students here. It's really – it's a scary time. It's just nuts out there, and everybody's in chaos mode, so we'll see what happens. But let's go on to a happier subject, your expertise. And as I've mentioned this, Sarub, you have mentioned this to me from time to time about narrow reading. You love this technique of literacy development. You might even be getting your PhD. Are you getting your PhD in that subject, narrow reading? What's your PhD going to be?
I am definitely interested in incorporating narrow reading component in my research for my doctoral journey. However, my studies would more focus on writing, multilingual writing. But how can we imagine writing without reading? They go hand in hand. I'm sure there will be definitely some component of narrow reading that I probably would love to bring.
I hope you do. And it's like the old song. I think you probably know this, the three R's. When I say that, are you familiar with the three R's?
The reading, responding, and reviewing?
No. And I'm going to tell you, this is funny. This is you'll like this. I guess it's an American colloquialism, an American saying, but they refer to they always have referred to education for 150 years as learning the three R's. But it's funny, and I'll say them to you because I'll explain it in a second. They are reading, writing, and arithmetic. Okay? Now, think about that for a second, because the only one that actually begins with an R is reading. But when people say they want to learn the three R's, they go, oh, yeah, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Okay? And that's an American saying. Obviously, it had never made its way to India.
Wow. I'm sure there must be a kind of three R existing in India, but I will definitely make a note of these three R's.
It's just a fun little thing. It's an old song, which I'm not going to horrify you by singing, but they used to sing reading, writing, and arithmetic, and in the old days they would discipline kids by slapping them with a stick made of hickory. So it's reading and writing and arithmetic, all to the tune of the hickory stick. Of course, be quiet there, Billy, and these slap him on the head with a stick, okay? And that's funny. It's my pleasure to tell you this, believe me. But my standing joke is we need to go way beyond the three R's because we have to remember that only one of them actually begins with an R. Writing starts with a W, and arithmetic starts with an A for arithmetic. So anyway, there you go. You just learned something, the original three R's.
Thanks for
you. Okay? Yeah. And it's amazing because, you're a graduate student in education here in America, and of course that would not come up because it's just a lot of hooey, but it's an old cliche, and it's funny. Okay, so let's get into the show, but I'm glad I was able to share that with you and with the audience as well. Okay, tell everybody what narrow reading is, and then put it into context of what you do, because I like that equity side of it. It's important, and I know a little bit about it, in ESL. So tell everybody what narrow reading means. Sarub Anand, doctor.
Thank you so much. So when it comes to narrow reading, there's no doubt that reading is a very crucial lifelong skill, and a balanced approach certainly support one's interest in reading, which is precisely what narrow reading does. In simple words, narrow reading is a specialized reading technique where the reader reads text based on a specific theme or the creations of a single author. It is one of the scaffolded techniques which makes text more accessible for children while reading because of the repetitive exposure to the content vocabulary, and it essentially aids early-age language learners in establishing the logical connection between the text that they are reading and their understanding. And with the help of repetitive vocabulary exposure, narrow reading proves to be accelerating, I would say, the metalinguistic awareness of the words used. In simple words, making the background knowledge of the topic strong. And hence, in the whole picture, it ends up boosting our future academics' confidence in the longer run.
It really does. But there's a lot of ways to define this, and I'm going to ask you something, because when I looked this up to learn a little bit more about it, they said narrow reading can be done by theme. Narrow reading can be done by author. In other words, just keep reading the same author and author again to get into their syntax, etc. But you're saying, I don't know whether theme, but I'm going to use the word. Are you saying topic is the best way to do this? By topic?
Well, yes. So basically, theme is the bigger set, and a topic could be one subset, but it could be done in both ways. It depends upon what grade level you're working with. So let me give you an example. Let me answer this question, please. With the help of an example. So say suppose we are in grade 11 and it's an English class where they have to read different prose fiction passages for their ACT, right? And perhaps later they have to write a response using claim as evidence, reasoning or explanation. But they can still do it, you know, by reading about the same topic or the theme, I would say. It intentionally indulges students into, first of all, in the reading schedule. And as they develop the reading schedule, they come across the lexicons as well as the grammar structures used in those reading materials repetitively in a controlled environment.
Okay, so have you seen this actually? Yeah, that's good, but have you seen this? And I think you have, okay, because now you're a full-fledged, big-time educator. Again, you're going to get your doctorate one of these days soon, okay? Outside of the textbook, have you seen this work in a classroom? Have you worked it? Have you seen teachers work it?
Okay, so I would like to say this, that, be it struggling readers or readers in general, there are so many resources our teachers already use in, such as high-low text in the classroom to support students with varied fluency in the classroom. So choosing these classroom materials, intentionally based on fewer themes and the authors that our students really, really have interest and they would love to read, is one way to serve them. For example, I'm going to take this example of pandemic or, Black Lives Matter. Okay. So suppose providing students reading on COVID pandemic or Black Lives Matter. So while reading these topics progressively and extensively, our budding readers would experience more in-depth knowledge of the same topic or the similar theme. Mm-hmm. So here it connects to your question in theme or topic, and they will slowly build their personalized glossary of the words and the phrases that they have already few words that they all have strong grip over, and they are more probable to gain knowledge. Extensive knowledge of the topic in terms of learning synonyms, antonyms, and topic-related terminologies. And in fact, when I was in my master's degree, I actually did a research, a corpus-based research, and where I analyzed a few texts by a company called Capstone Literacy Center. They run this encyclopedic website. And I was doing some analyzing their text based on narrow reading conventions, and it proved that if students are reading, different modules, if there's any science-based module, and within that module, if there's life sciences, and then then there is earth and space sciences. So vocabulary is recycling. So even though a student is reading one, because of the vocabulary recycling, they're able to read the other module much more effectively based upon the vocabulary that they have read or come across in the previous module that they had read.
It makes sense because you're using it literally as building blocks, one to the next, one to the next, one to the next. It gets slightly more complicated as you go, but you're using the text they know to create more for them. But my question would be, okay, as you do that, and this is a serious question, is it too narrow? Okay, I'm not sure, I have to ask that. I don't know the answer. Is it too narrow that the students aren't getting enough vocabulary outside of a given area? Can it work against somebody in that way?
See, it again depends. And here I would like to say it's a wonderful question though, but I would like to answer this very smartly, saying that this is not the end. It is just the first step. You know, here we are talking about different. Here our audience is early age language learners. They could be both domestic speakers of English and ESL students, and it is just giving them or exposing them or making them comfortable with the reading process and making them more, making literacy as their second nature. And while adapting this technique, we are focusing more on quality over, because, you know, if the children are entering to the classroom and they are reading every day something new. Suppose today they are reading about pandemic, and tomorrow they are reading about cultural diversity in India, and then day after tomorrow about Antarctica. All these topics have their own importance, and I'm not denying that. But how to contextualize the themes, how to pick up those resources, how to intentionally choose them for the so that our students don't feel the stress of reading and the literacy development or learning a new language is the gist here.
That's interesting, and so I understand what you. And I get this, and I do like it, and this is a great way to teach literacy, and if I may, to children who really need that, and it might be in some. Well, it could be anywhere, but to children who really need it. But particularly if I'm just reading what you love, and what I like too is ESL, English as a Second Language. This is a great way, okay, for these kids to start to build vocabulary and build literacy by constantly building on what they already know and not constantly changing things in front of them. Right?
Yes.
It's pretty good.
And focusing on making their background knowledge strong, so that they can read more stuff based on what they already have.
And you know what's interesting? You said something interesting. You said about pandemic, and you said about Black Lives Matter. A few, just as two topics that obviously are top of mind these days, and come up continually. And there's an interesting point there, and is that kids really engage in what interests them. And we can make things harder and harder and harder once we get kids engaged well in what interests them. You look at the classroom you have, the kids you are teaching, find materials that will interest them, and then you can build the literacy, okay, and the rigor of classrooms. Okay, and I love what you're saying here, that this thing actually works. Do most teachers understand this? Where does this stand, narrow reading? And I know, again, Rob, that you love this, but where does this stand in the – and I'm not a reading teacher. So where does this stand in the pantheon, so to speak, all the choices of reading, of teaching reading? Do most people get that this is the way to do it, or is this something new, narrow reading?
Narrow reading is essentially, if you try to dig into it, it is not a very, very new technique. It has always existed for years, but it's just that it has not been used to its best potential. It has many phases that, you know, the way we have narrow reading, there's another concept called narrow listening. For that, I probably have to come another time to your show. But it has always existed. But talking about how does it look like in classroom, I would say things have been changing. Earlier, what used to happen, teachers used to incorporate, please correct me if I'm wrong, whatever best they could find, or because of the lack of resources around them, lack of budget and stuff like that. But now, because of the federal engagement, or it has become the part of advocacy. There has been a lot of conversation related to importance of education and equality and making classes more inclusive. Teachers are actually putting a lot of effort, and these days teachers do not really have to think out of the box. Teachers need to be more attentive inside their classroom in order to get the idea of what they probably can teach in the next class. The idea lies within the class. Earlier, what used to happen, and it includes me also, that I would like to bring new things in my, out of the box, or new things for my students. And they will enjoy. If they enjoy, it's a good thing. But what if they don't? But if I try to be more conscious of what is happening inside the classroom, what things our students care about and they might be interested in. If I contextualize in my classroom and bringing cultural productions or reading texts to teach them, so first, their interest is intact. Second, they will be happy developing reading rigor, as you mentioned earlier. And third, our language and content objective within the classroom or pedagogically will be taken care of automatically. So it's all about smart work over hard work, if you see.
It's this whole thing, and I have to say something. I'm always amazed. That's the basic thing that education does. Mm-hmm. All right, in my opinion, to me, it's magic. Okay, it teaches us to read. Okay, and if you think about that, we're not born with that skill. Okay, we are taught to read. Sadly, some people can't read, and that narrows the world for them. Okay, and just the idea that we can teach people to read, all right, and then take it down the next step in the language that we want them to read. It's such an incredible thing that happens, and I'm always in awe of that. So, Rob, talk about how this will work, and this is a key thing, okay, in the world we live in today, which will probably be a lot of online learning through the fall. All right, I think even if schools open, they're probably going to shut down again fairly soon. All right, unfortunately. So talk about, how you would use this. You see it. You're an expert now. How would you use it, okay, in online learning?
Okay. So, usually what happens in the conventional sense, narrow reading has been researched in terms of availing students physical reading books, in the physical form. They read on different topics, texts, and themes. But because of the ongoing pandemic, everything is in air, right? So in this case, instead of availing books, institutions can avail or give students access to interactive cultural production, different modalities such as film, drama, audiobooks, TV, or maybe I would say streaming shows, on same topic or to gain their same knowledge base that we are expecting them to do out of or expecting them to receive from those physical books, and then connect them to the writing activity. Repeated listening exposure could also lead to better language acquisition in fun or life way. So cultural productions, incorporating this, adapting the same narrow reading technique or maybe the narrow word from that overall technique to in different capacities could also help in making students' language learning experience more fun, or maybe more, I would say...
more engaged. They'd become more engaged.
Yes, that would be a right word. More meaningful. Yeah,
more meaningful to them. Mm-hmm. If it's more meaningful to them, they are more engaged in their learning. And I have to say something. In this day and age where we're going to have less control because we may not be in the same place with them, okay, as like we have been in the past, okay, their engagement in learning is top of mind, all right? Because if they're engaged, they'll go do the extra mile on their own at home, okay, and get those assignments done. If we continue, we can't ride herd on them anymore. It's a very interesting time, and I like this whole idea. So, Rob, one last question. And I don't know if you know the answer to this. I know you love it, but in teacher education these days, okay, as we prepare, and I guess this is a lot of ESL and elementary school educators for teaching reading, are the professors saying that narrow reading is good? Is the research point that it's really a good thing? Is it being taught as a way to teach?
Yes, I would say that, and I guess that was one of my interests. Why I was exposed to narrow reading. I did my research with my graduate degree thesis advisor, and she just introduced me, and after reading about it a little bit, I just couldn't say no to a research project. I did my research related to it. So it was very interesting, and researchers are collaborating with other local education stakeholders, say local publishing house. They are collaborating in creating and availing reading as well as grade-appropriated literary sources based on narrow reading conventions in order to cater to the language needs of struggling readers and also general readers, who induce their interest in literacy. Bring and bottom into an avid reader.
No, I was going to say, if we could turn people into avid readers, this does the trick. And I found it interesting that where did you go to undergraduate school? Did you go to undergraduate school and get your bachelor's degree in India, or did you get it here in the States?
Yes, I asked. Bachelor's degree in India, and I did my undergraduate in business administration.
Oh, wow. There you go. I like bringing a business mind to education. I love that. And I find it interesting that it was a graduate school professor of yours, all right, who taught you about this, and you picked up on it. I think this is really good stuff, all right? I have to ask you now, what got you to switch from business into education? I love that.
So, when I was doing my undergraduate degree in business, I always wanted that. So, one day I was thinking that, I'm in India and I speak three languages, but what difference it makes me, right? So, I decided to learn Portuguese. I thought maybe having a little edge of knowing two different languages would make me globally employable. So,
yep.
I learned German and Hungarian. And then while learning those languages, it interests me so much that I end up doing, you know, teaching diplomas or taking teaching methods classes. And then at the end, I thought, why not I do which I would love to do for the rest of my life? And then I could not think anything other than languages. And then slowly, I stepped on the journey of becoming a teacher.
I got to hand it to you, my friend. It's such an interesting journey. I remember you telling me the first time we spoke about you learning German and Hungarian, and it's amazing the way it's taking you on a path for education, which I think is going to do a lot of students and a lot of your new colleagues a lot of good. Okay, you're really a good guy, Sir Rob. I got to tell you, it's just great. We got to go, so thank you so much for being with me today. You know you're always welcome here, my friend.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for your kind words. It really vindicates me to keep doing the work that I'm doing. Thank you so much.
You keep it up, and as you know, just stay in touch with me, okay? And just enjoy school this year, okay? I hope you don't get too stir-crazy from being online. Just enjoy it, okay?
So much. Bye, everybody. Thanks for having
me
today.
Thanks, Rob. Bye-bye. That, ladies and gentlemen, he's a good guy. I'm going to call him Doctor. He's getting his PhD. He's a graduate student over in the University of Georgia. He got in touch with me a few months ago. We've become friends. Sarab Anand, A-N-A-N-D, and he's going to go places and take what he's learning here, either to great kids here or to kids in India or wherever he winds up. He's a good guy, and he really cares. All right, we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. Tweet it out at EduTalkRadio. Please go over to join our equity consortium over at ACE-ED.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.